Grace, mercy, and peace be with all of you here this day from our triune God. Amen. Okay, about a millennial ago, back when I was born in 1957, that also happened to be the same year that the Russians successfully launched Sputnik 1 out into space. That event made the USSR, and not the U.S., the undisputed champions of space exploration back at that time. And you could almost hear this kind of a collective thud happen across the heartland of America from Long Island to Los Angeles. That thud was the sound of our nation's heart suddenly dropping. Stunned and shocked that we were now in second place when it came to space technology. And the Soviet Union was now ahead of us on that. But as some of you who would have also been perhaps around at that time might recall, our national response was rather immediate and intense. By May of 1961, President John Fitzgerald Kennedy decreed that America would be the first to put a man on the moon. And we did it. The Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo space programs rammed through more missions and developed more new technologies in the next 10 years that seemed even remotely possible back in 1961. And yet, as astounding as our space program accomplishments were back in those 1960s and early 70s, these lunar landings were an even more greater and a more amazing source of technological wonder from the perspective now that we look at it in our 21st century world. I mean, think about it. All of this sophisticated technology that looked so cool and so impressive on those 19-inch television screens that we had back in 1969. In fact, my father actually went out and bought our first color television set so that our family could watch the lunar landing in color. Of course, you remember it was in black and white, right? But in reality, it was so primitive, that technology, and so elementary that it's now kind of scary to think about how many lives actually depended upon it. I mean, let's face it, today most of our microwave ovens have more high-tech powered computers running them than did all of the rockets and the space capsules that took the first astronauts into space and to the moon. But as a nation, we were focused on getting to the future first. That meant whatever it took. And being first, being in the lead, meant two things. It meant, first off, imperfections and misperceptions. And it also meant altercations and accusations. Today, as followers of Jesus, we are called to get out ahead of the crowd. In other words, we are called to take the lead. In a world where everything is moving rapidly, we can't afford to just simply stand still. The only way that you can hit a moving target is to get out ahead of it. In other words, to lead it. And God calls us to be the ones who are out there in front. God is calling us to be in the lead, to lean into the future. In fact, God promises that when we go to the front, when we move into that future forward, future friendly mode, that we will find that God is already there. God will be just as he promised to Moses, standing there in front of you. Leadership, therefore, is really this art of catching up to where God already is. It's the art of finding and following what God is already doing. But being the one that is out in front also has some serious disadvantages to it. As those early astronauts who were the first to fly to the moon soon discovered, and as Moses also discovered, as is revealed here in this morning's first reading that we have. It means not always getting everything right. So let's call this imperfections and misconceptions. It also means experiencing some big time squabbles and bickering. So let's call this altercations and accusations. This morning, what I want us to do is to take a closer look for a few minutes at that first lunar landing that took place. Now, if you're going to get to the future first, then you are going to experience some imperfections and some misperceptions along the way. In other words, you're going to make some mistakes and you're going to take some missteps. Take, for example, the first speech that was ever uttered from another celestial body. You all know it by heart, I'm sure, here this morning, right? It was spoken by Neil Armstrong as he stepped out of the lunar module and onto the surface of the moon. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Now, I don't know about you, but I take great comfort in knowing that the very first speech that was ever given from outside the planet Earth was a first-class misstep. In other words, Armstrong muffed his lines here. Think about it. One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. It doesn't make any sense. In those pre-gender conscious days, man and mankind meant exactly the same thing. The actual sentence that Armstrong had rehearsed and the one that he was going to give and what was the most logically progressive one was one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind. Armstrong even at one point claimed that he had actually given the line right, but that he had been misquoted, or that some static interference must have shorted out that little word, "ah." However, eventually, even Armstrong, when forced to listen to his own words, shuddered with the realization, "I really did it. I blew the first words on the moon, didn't I?" But even though these words weren't spoken as they were scripted to be spoken, they nevertheless became some of the most famous words that we have out of the 20th century. You can find them in every dictionary of famous quotations. So God can use even our misquotes, our mistakes, and our missteps in life. And to tell you the truth, how many of you who are here this morning even realized how grammatically absurd those first words were that were spoken from the moon? Which brings me then to the second point of what will happen when you go and you take the lead. You'll be caught up in all kinds of altercations and accusations. Have you ever wondered why there is so little photographic evidence of the very first man on the moon, Neil Armstrong? Well, there is a huge backstory to this as well. At one point, a battle began to ensue between the members of the Apollo 11 crew as to who would be the first person to set foot out on the moon. Buzz Aldrin, who was module pilot, he was initially the one picked to step out on the lunar surface first. But Armstrong was the mission commander, and he got the backing of NASA, partly because of his seat in the lunar module being the one that was closest to the door. However, peeved that Armstrong had won the right to step out onto the moon first, Aldrin got even by refusing to take any pictures of Armstrong as they romped around on that moonscape. In fact, except for the self-portrait that Armstrong made of his own feet hitting the lunar surface, the only other photograph that we have of Armstrong on this entire moon mission is a reflection of himself as seen in Aldrin's helmet visor. A picture, by the way, that Armstrong had taken a picture of Aldrin. So at this very important moment of technological achievement, it was still human mistakes and it was squabbling that set the most memorable words and pictures into our history books today. Now, our old reading that we have, our Old Testament reading that we have from Exodus this morning describes the Israelites' third and most malicious round of grumbling and complaining against Moses' leadership abilities. In Exodus 14:11 and in 16:3 and now here in 17:3, the Israelites do no less than to accuse Moses of malfeasance. Yet Moses had certainly made a mistake or two along the way, and yes, he didn't get everything right. But it was Moses who on two previous occasions had called upon the Lord to provide the miracle of the parting of the Red Sea and also provide that life-sustaining manna out in the wilderness. However, at this third crisis, the Israelites were more verbally abusive than ever. They quarreled against Moses and they wanted to test the Lord with their vicious accusations. The man who had stood up to Pharaoh and who had stood down the entire Egyptian army now feared that his own people might actually stone him to death. Moses had led these people deep into the wilderness, into an unknown, frightening place. They had been making steady progress on their journey, but progressing to where and to what was still unclear to most of them. The people had journeyed together in stages as the Lord had commanded, but now they had reached the stage of greatest challenge for them. Far from all that they had ever known, the people were again suddenly faced with a new crisis. There was no water for the people to drink. How could they continue to trust and to follow a leader who would bring them to such a desperate state? What kind of leader would require so much risk on the part of those being led? The serious, threatening nature of the Israelites' discontent with Moses and with God led for the location of this dispute to be christened Massa and Meribah, which literally means the place of trial and the place of quarreling. So negative were the people's attitude towards Moses and towards God that Massa and Meribah are often repeated symbols here of the Israelites' faithlessness, as we find in other places throughout the Old Testament, like Numbers chapter 14, verses 23 through 23, Deuteronomy 6:16 and 8:15 and 9:22, Psalm 78:15 and 16, the one we had this morning, Psalm 95, verse 8, and Psalm 114:11, as well as Isaiah 48:21. In each of these texts, we find references to this incident that took place at Massa and Meribah, the places of squabbling and of bickering. And so, if you're summoned to lead like Moses, or like one of those first lunar astronauts, well, then you'll be accused of imperfections and misperceptions. And you will face all kinds of altercations and accusations. And that is because, you see, true leaders exist in the same way that the church itself exists, with this ideal of one heart and one mind, but with the reality of missteps and mistakes, and of squabbles and scandals. And yet, leaders must be ready to lead to those places where God already is. Amen.